Colonel Beaver, Reel 1. When were you born, Colonel Beaver?
1st March 1905.
Where was this?
Newark-on-Trent, Nottinghamshire.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a country solicitor with the taste of his class. He was almost a first-class shot. In his younger days, he hunted a bit, but when he had two children, he couldn't afford to keep it up. So I was brought up in a sporting atmosphere. He was a keen shot, a keen player of ball games such as tennis and golf and cricket.
Where were you educated?
Bramford Scarborough, where I was bombarded by the German Navy in December 1914. Then Winchester College, where I got a scholarship, and then New College, Oxford. So I am a Wickhamist in both sense.
Do you remember the German bombardment?
Oh, yes.
Can you describe what happened?
It happened at 8 o'clock in the morning, just as we were all sitting down to breakfast in the school hall. And shells landed in the playground outside. And immediately after the bombardment ceased, which went on for perhaps half an hour or more, the masters sensibly took us all out behind a local hill called Oliver's Mount, where we were really effectively out of range of naval bombardment. The masters also, I think, behaved rather sensibly, that after it was all over, they sent us all home by train, so that the boys in the school would get home before the parents even heard the news, which in 1914 there was no radio. And in fact, I got home to Nottinghamshire, and my parents knew nothing about the bombardment of Scarborough.
Was it a terrifying experience?
Not as much as I expected. I mean, it was a shock, because I mean, we were literally sitting down to breakfast, and shells started falling in the playground outside. It wasn't a terrifying experience as I'd expected, but it was certainly a bit of a shock to everybody. And in those days, anyway, there were relatively few people who'd been under fire at the age, say, in my case, of 8.
Were some of the children very much upset? Were they crying?
I don't recall any case of emotional upheavals.
What kind of damage was done?
To the school, very little. To some of the houses on the more or less on the seafront, there was quite a lot of damage. I don't recall anything about casualties. I don't think there were many casualties. It was a rather misty morning, and Scarborough was not the only place on the coast, on the northeast coast, which was bombarded by the German Navy on that day. Because obviously two or three or more naval squadrons got through owing to the mist, and I forget the names of, I think Whitby and Hartlepool and one or two others were bombarded, and the casualties were remarkably few. There was, of course, great indignation in the country as a whole, enemy bombardment of civilian objectives with no military value.
Was there shrapnel all over the place?
Oh yes, you picked up. I think I picked up a piece of shell fragment.
Hot? Was it hot?
I really don't recall. I expect it was, but I don't recall.
Now, after you went to public school, you went to Oxford, did you?
Yes.
And which college was that?
It was New College.
What did you read there?
I read Mods and Greats, Honor, Moderations, and Literae Humaniores.
When did you leave?
1928. I was up at Oxford from 1924 to 1928, 4 years.
What did you do when you left?
I wanted to be an archaeologist, but in those days, it wasn't that they didn't pay you a living wage to be an archaeologist, they didn't pay you anything at all, and that I couldn't afford. And I'd been under pressure from my father to become a lawyer and to follow in his footsteps. He always wanted me to become a country lawyer in Nottinghamshire, which has certain attractions, and you don't make much money, but you meet on quite an interesting lot of people. Some at least of your clients are well-to-do people with estates, and you probably get a fair amount of shooting and other sporting activities. But when I was at Oxford, I was really in two minds as to whether to become a solicitor or a barrister, on the assumption that I could never afford to be an archaeologist. And I was introduced to a well-known Chancery QC, Casey he was then, who subsequently became a Chancery judge, and he was none other than Crossman J, the father of Dick Crossman, who later on was at Winchester with me. In fact, he was head of the school 2 years after I was.
How did you come to be recruited to SOE?
Sometime about 1938, my firm, Slaughter and May, who were one of the leading firms in the city in the field of what is now called corporation law, and we handled a great many prospectuses and issues and company matters, and at that time I was a qualified solicitor, but I was not yet a partner in the firm, and I and a partner with whom I did a great deal of work, who was one of the ablest lawyers I ever knew, and we handled one particular issue for a company, a well-known public company, where one of the part-time directors was Sir Frank Nelson, who later became the first head of SOE. And he was obviously impressed with the performance of my partner and myself. And very soon after he became head of SOE, I think it was July or August 1940, and he was the first head, he got hold of my partner and persuaded him to join an organization about which nobody knew anything. And after he'd persuaded my partner, he said to him, What about that man Beaver who worked with you on that company matter? You and he seem to get on pretty well together. And at a later stage in November, and I was then a territorial gunnery officer in the anti-aircraft field, and I got a sudden summons from London to attend for an urgent interview.
Who was your partner?
Hugh Quennell, same as Quennell, the author, but he always pronounced it Quennell. And he was a very quick thinking, sharp man, who was sharp in the good sense. I mean, he was one of the leading lawyers in the city at the time. And he was in SOE. He was a bit, he had a mischievous strain in him and rather enjoyed being the enfant terrible, particularly when he had anything to do with the man who was Member of Parliament for Chelsea at that time, none other than Sir Samuel Hoare, who of course at that very time was being made ambassador in Madrid. And so there were plenty of opportunities for clash. And in fact, I remember Sam Hoare was himself in World War I, was in MI6 in Russia. I think, I forget whether it was Moscow or, and he knew about Secret Service work. And like most ambassadors, but with the benefit of experience, he was very anti any Secret Service operating in his territory, because it was a possible and probable source of embarrassment and would tend to deprive him of the credit which would otherwise be his. And I remember there was an occasion, he appointed a very capable naval attaché, Alan Hilgarth, to be his representative to deal with all secret services, whether it was escapes or intelligence or, as in our case, potential resistance. And Hilgarth, they were all told to report to Hilgarth and not to trouble the ambassador. And there was an occasion, I think it would have been sometime in 1941, when the Germans organized a demonstration against the British embassy and got a crowd together who threw rocks at and broke the windows. And the Spanish police were persuaded to look the other way. And it so happened my friend and partner at that time, was at that particular moment, he was in Gibraltar, and he sent a cable to Hilgarth, the naval attaché, saying, "This was not, repeat not, my doing."